taking their place in a long true line of everyday Americans,
helping to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. This is the Constitution Study on the America Out Loud Network with your host, Paul Engel.
Pay the bills, stay out of jail, love the neighbors and have a few good friends. Every day you were every day American.
Hello there, everyday Americans, and welcome to the Constitution Study, where we read and study the Constitution, and we teach the rising generation to be free. I am glad you could join me. Well, today's going to be an interesting topic. Daniel Webster said, "I apprehend no danger to our country from a foreign foe. Our destruction, should it come at all, will be from another quarter. From the inattention of the people to the concerns of their government, from their carelessness and negligence, I must confess that I do apprehend some danger." And I think these are apropos words. I think we are living in that time where our inattentiveness and carelessness and negligence is leading to the destruction of the republic. Now, there are several examples, and today I want to take a look at some of them. The first I want to look at is a little thing called constitutional exceptions. Now, Article 6, Clause 2 of the Constitution says that it is the supreme law of the land. Only laws of the United States made pursuant to the Constitution or treaties made within the power of the United States are also elevated to that level. So what happens when the Constitution is no longer treated as the supreme law of the land, when it becomes flexible, malleable in the hands of those in government, when people who are supposed to abide by and support the Constitution decide that they can find exceptions to it? A recent case argued before the Supreme Court revolved around what's called the community caretaker exception to the Fourth Amendment. Now, this is an excellent example of how constitutional law, which is nothing more than the opinion of judges, is being used to circumvent the Constitution of the United States. Oral arguments were given before the Supreme Court in the case Coniglia versus Strom. Now, the petitioner, Mr. Edward A. Coniglia, has sued Robert F. Strom and several other officials of the city of Cranston, Rhode Island, after police officers entered his home without a warrant and confiscated Mr. Strom's property, specifically two handguns, then refused to return them. Specifically, Mr. Strom claimed that the city of Cranston had violated his rights protected by the Second and Fourth Amendments, and that the city violated the 14th Amendment's due process and equal protection clauses. Now, reading from the complaint, quote, "At issue here is petitioner's claim that the entry into his home and resulting seizures, effected without a warrant or civil order, violated his Fourth Amendment rights. The officer's only justification for the entry and seizure was the, quote, community caretaking, quote, exception." Now, the argument made by Mr. Coniglia's attorney was quite simple, quote, "The Fourth Amendment recognizes the sanctity of the home by drawing a firm line at the door. The government cannot cross that line without a warrant unless there is consent or exigent circumstances. Here, there was neither. Respondent's warrantless seizure of petitioners from his home and their subsequent seizure of his lawfully possessed guns from his bedroom and garage violated the Fourth Amendment." As one would expect, the attorney arguing for the city of Cranston argued differently. Quote, "The question presented is whether the caretaking by police officers and first responders may under certain circumstances take place in the home without a warrant. It should. The petitioner has an absolute petition. Under no circumstances should a warrantless caretaking occur inside a home except upon consent or exigent circumstances. This absolute all-or-nothing approach is contrary to the reasonable standard of the Fourth Amendment, the very touchstone of the Fourth Amendment. There may be circumstances that allow for caretaking in the home absent a warrant. When the advent of the potential harm is not so clear, but the need to respond could be immediate, time could be of the essence." So the question is, which argument is correct? Now, if I understand the arguments made correctly, the community caretaking exception was something the courts came up with based on hypothetical arguments made in cases like Katie versus Dombrowski, which involved a search of a vehicle in police custody. Now, there is just one problem with these arguments. There is no exception to the Constitution. Period. In order for a search to be legal, it must be reasonable. Now, while the definition of reasonable is not as specific as we would like, that is the standard. Webster's 1828 dictionary defines reasonable as, quote, having the faculty of reason, endued with reason, as a reasonable being. It also defines reason as, quote, a faculty of the mind by which it distinguishes truth from falsehood and good from evil, and which enables the possessor to deduce inferences from facts or from propositions. When the term reasonable is used in the Constitution, it is most often referred to as what a reasonable person would find reasonable. I know, circular logic, but that tends to be the standard most often used. The idea of the community caretaker exception seems to be distinguishing between the investigative function of law enforcement and its merely caretaker functions. However, this brings to light another fallacy about the Constitution. The limitations the Constitution places is upon government, not simply law enforcement. It is just as illegal for a public school official, a census taker, or a city dog catcher to unreasonably search or seize you or your property as it is for law enforcement to do so. For any government official to search you or your property, it must be reasonable. That generally means there must be an imminent threat to someone or that the official has gone to court to get a legitimate warrant. Should a government official with legitimate concerns for the welfare of someone enter a home, they should not be allowed to search it. That would be unreasonable. We've all seen the crime drama where the law enforcement officer, knowing that there's evidence in someone's home, pretends to hear a call for help, then uses that as justification for entering and searching. I know of no reasonable person that would consider that a reasonable search. In the same vein, should law enforcement be dispatched to someone's home for a wellness check? They are there to check on a person's health and should not be allowed to use that as an excuse to search or seize items, even if they're in plain view. Before we go on, let us look at the question of reasonableness in this case. See, after a heated argument between Mr. Coniglia and his wife, Mrs. Coniglia spent the night at a motel. The next day, concerned about her husband, Mrs. Coniglia contacted Cranston police and asked them to escort her home and do a wellness check on her husband. From the petition to the Supreme Court, quote, multiple officers arrived to meet her. Mrs. Coniglia told them what had happened and that she was concerned about her husband's safety, including the possibility that he could be suicidal. After calling petitioner, who, quote, sounded fine, close quote, the officers escorted Mrs. Coniglia back to the home, where they instructed her to stay in the car while they spoke to the petitioner about on the back deck. Petitioner told the officers about what had happened and that he had said, quote, just shoot me, quote, close quote, because he couldn't take it anymore. He was calm for the most part, seemed normal, and said that he would never commit suicide. Mrs. Coniglia then entered the home. Say what you will about the wisdom of Mr. Coniglia's words, uttered in the heat of the moment. When interviewed outside his home, the officers found him calm and normal, but they were not convinced. Quote, based on the conversation with petitioner and Mrs. Coniglia, the officers believed there was a risk that petitioner would harm himself. As a result, they summoned a rescue lieutenant from the Cranston Fire Department to the Coniglia's home. That officer told petitioner that he was taking him to a local hospital. Petitioner went along after the police told him they would not take his two handguns if he did so. At the hospital, a nurse and a social worker examined petitioner. He was discharged the very same day, but had to pay about $1,000 for the visit. The police officers convinced Mr. Coniglia to go to the hospital for an examination, a trip which cost him about $1,000. Mr. Coniglia would only go after the police told him they would not take his firearms, but that was not the case. Quote, meanwhile, the officers entered the Coniglia's home to seize the petitioner's guns. The officers believed, quote, it was reasonable to do so based on petitioner's state of mind, close quote, and feared that, quote, petitioner and others could be in danger, close quote, if guns remained in the home. After officers falsely represented to Mrs. Coniglia that petitioner had consented, she led the officers to the guns. The officers then seized them. And law enforcement wonders why people don't trust them. First, they lied to Mr. Coniglia about them confiscating his property. Then they lied to his wife about Mr. Coniglia's consent. Now, if the officers thought they had probable cause to seize the weapons, why did they not get a warrant? Police noted that Mr. Coniglia seemed normal, for the most part calm, yet they thought it was reasonable to not only confiscate this man's property, but to do so without any probable cause. If the police officers thought it was reasonable, why did they wait until after Mr. Coniglia had left the premises? And why did they lie to him about their intentions? Yes, the wife stated that she was concerned, but if she thought it was reasonable for officers to confiscate her husband's firearms, why did they have to lie to her about his consent? Then, to add insult to injury, the saga wasn't over. Quote, a few days later, Mrs. Coniglia went to the police station to retrieve the guns. Officers refused her request. A month later, petitioner went to the police station with the same request. Again, the officers refused. When petitioner's attorney made the same request, he fared no better. So we have an illegal seizure of private property, a deprivation of rights under color of law, and law enforcement was allowed to lie during the commission of a crime while acting under their oath of office. Yet it does not seem they have been charged. Instead, we have innocent citizens having to fight for the return of their illegally seized property, property that was not returned until after Mr. Coniglia sued the city. We should not be surprised when those in government attempt to find exceptions to the Constitution, especially when it restricts their actions. And I'm not surprised when government actors in the form of judges either invent these exceptions or use those created by their predecessors. There is no exception to the Fourth Amendment's protection, or for that matter, any other constitutional rules. A search or seizure is either reasonable or not. If government actors could not or do not get a warrant, they need a really good reason to search and seize. It is not reasonable to use the excuse of checking on someone's well-being to circumvent the supreme law of the land. It is also unreasonable and should be illegal for government actors to lie to those they are supposed to serve. If we allow members of courts to continue to violate their oath to support the Constitution, then we are just as much to blame as they are. So tell me, why should those on the district court who found it reasonable for law enforcement to seize property without probable cause and to lie to make it happen, is it reasonable that they should not be investigated for judicial misconduct? If the people of this country cannot trust their courts to abide by the law they swore or affirmed to uphold, then we must demand our representatives in the House do their jobs and oversee the court. And if we cannot trust those we hire to represent us to do their jobs, then it's about time we found better people to represent us. You know, we talk a lot about those in government and blaming those in government, and we forget that either they were hired by us in an election or they're overseen by people who are hired by us in an election. The situation that took place in Rhode Island, I doubt is unique, but as often as we complain about the work of those in the police officers, even the courts, what about the people we hire to exercise our power? See, the thing we seem to forget is that the Constitution is only ink on parchment. It's not a magic shield. It's not, Wonder Woman's lasso. It's not going to suddenly jump up and do something. It is our justification for holding our elected officials accountable, for holding those in government accountable to the rule of law. But as the American people have forgotten, have not been educated, have allowed themselves to be duped, to believe that a search is not a search, that it's perfectly legitimate for government officials to lie to their employers, that those who are to serve the public actually rule over them. That's because we've let them get away with it. We have allowed those in authority to get too big for their britches. And when this was a small problem, our forefathers, our parents and our grandparents didn't deal with the issue because it was a small thing. It was not a big thing. But small things left alone over time become big things. You know, there's a saying, beware the Ides of March. Well, here we have the Ides of April, because on April 15th, President Biden signed an executive order. Well, that's nothing new. He's been signing them since he assumed office. But this executive order is different. It's a little unique, not simply because it's an executive order, but because of what it says. Now, he claims that he has powers under certain laws. We'll talk about those in a minute. But he basically says that there's a problem with the Russian actions of the government of the Russian Federation, that they're here to, that they have efforts to undermine the conduct of free and fair democratic elections and democratic institutions in the United States. Of course, he hasn't provided any evidence of that. In fact, we had, what, 3 years, almost 4 years of accusations that President Trump was acting under influence of the Russian Federation and never any evidence provided. But based on this, President Biden issued an executive order, and Section 1 of the order reads, all properties and interests in property that are in the United States that hereafter come within the United States, or that are or hereafter come into the possession or control of any United States person of the following persons are blocked and may be transferred, may not be transferred, paid, exported, withdrawn, or otherwise dealt in. In other words, this is a ban. If you are one of the people that are identified here, anything you own, any property, any interest in a business or interest in any property, is stuck. You can't sell it. You can't export it. You can't withdraw from it. You can't deal in this property. Well, who are these people that are so dangerous that they are barred from conducting business, from disposing of property in the United States? Well, sub-item A, or more accurately, Section 1A reads, any person determined by the Secretary of the Treasury in consultation with the Secretary of State and, with respect to subsection A2 of this section, in consultation with the Attorney General or by the Secretary of State in consultation with the Secretary of the Treasury and, with respect to subsection A2 of this section, in consultation with the Attorney General. Is anybody else noticing the drivel that's coming out of here? So what do these people notice? Who gets to decide? You know what they don't say? Anyone found in a court of law. Now, Section 1A goes on, subsection 1, to operate or have operated in the technology sector or the defense and related material sector of the Russian Federation economy or any other sector of the Russian Federation economy as may be determined by the Secretary of Treasury in consultation with the Secretary of State, or A2, to be responsible for or complicit in or have directly or indirectly engaged or attempted to engage in any of the following for or on behalf of, for the benefit of, directly or indirectly, the government of the Russian Federation. And then he goes through a list, malicious cyber activities, interference with the government, undermining the democratic process, a whole bunch of things that, well, let's just say they're very vague. And many of them, I don't even know, are criminal. When they say interference with the democratic process or institutions in the United States or abroad, what does that mean? So this is what we have. We have the President of the United States acting like a king, issuing diktat, issuing an order from his office, saying if the Secretary of the Treasury, the Secretary of State, the Attorney General, or can some way, shape, or form determine that you have operated for the Russian Federation and have committed one of these actions, you can have your everything you own put on hold, frozen. Now, why is this so dangerous? Well, first of all, we start with Section 1, the primary Section 1. There is no due process here. There is no must be proven in a court of law beyond a reasonable doubt. There is no due process here. So this violates the Fifth Amendment of the Constitution. That means it violates the law, and it means President Biden has violated his oath of office. So there's problem number one. Problem number two, now he wants to punish people for things that are not crimes. All right, malicious cyber activities, possibly. Interference in the United States or other foreign election, okay. Actions or policies that undermine democratic process or institutions in the United States or abroad. Time. I had my Facebook account shut down. I believe in part because I was talking about the problems in the upcoming presidential election. This happened in November of 2020. And I was noting that states were violating the Constitution by allowing the judicial system to change the manner of choosing electors, a direct violation of the Constitution of the United States. For that, I was shut down. For that, there are people that will tell me I was interfering with the democratic processes of the institution of the United States because I was pointing out the people who are actually interfering with it. Do you really trust politicians that spent 3 years without any evidence claiming that the president of the United States was a Russian stooge are not going to use this for anything they don't like? Information about issues with the election has been shut down by many outlets, media outlets, social media outlets. Do we really think that a political appointee, right? Secretary of Treasury, Secretary of State, Attorney General, these are all appointed by the president. Do you really believe that they will never use this against a political actor? Imagine having your bank account frozen because you dare to note when governments are breaking the law when it comes to an election. I mean, things like undermine the peace, security, and political stability. How? Tell me, does anybody think that President Biden or his Secretary of State or Secretary of Treasury, Attorney General plans to freeze the assets of BLM and Antifa activists for undermining the peace, security, and political stability of parts of the United States? This is, one person described it as simply canceling the Constitution. Well, you know what? He's simply ignoring parts of the Constitution. And here's my question. States, where are you? Where are the states standing up and saying, no, you do not have the legal authority to freeze assets without due process of law, to deny people their property or their liberty without due process of law? You cannot. Mr. Biden, you are not king. This is a gross violation of your oath of office. This is, in effect, President Biden attempting to make law by a pen. And most people aren't even talking about it because most people don't know anything about it because most people depend on infotainment, on the propaganda arm that we call the news media to inform them. This is truly dangerous. And what's sad, now, if you've ever written a term paper, you've probably, if you haven't done it yourself, you're probably aware of people who like to pad. They might pad the term paper. In other words, they'll throw in a lot of stuff just to get more words on paper. And as I read through this and did something strange, I actually did a little research. I found that President Biden was padding his justification to do this. And I'll show you how in just a few minutes. But first, I want to remind you that you can find out more about my show, get the latest podcast at AmericaOutloud.com. Just look under shows and or under the schedule. You'll find the Constitution Study and you will be in the know. You can also find out more at ConstitutionStudy.com. And again, I'll follow up with this right after this break.
There was a time when Americans could rely on the Fourth Estate. Well, in these challenging times, the media is both reckless and complicit. AmericaOutloud.com. Top analysis from leading experts, articles, podcasts, video, and 24/7 talk radio. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
Every day Americans.
Welcome back there, Everyday Americans. We are looking at one of President Biden's recent executive orders. Because we do things strange. We read and study the Constitution. We actually go back to the original document to find out if what we're being told is true. Now, in this executive order, on blocking property with respect to specified harmful foreign activities of the government of the Russian Federation, President Biden claims this authority vested in him by the Constitution and the laws of the United States, except the laws of the United States do not invest him with the power to punish people without due process. But we only use the Constitution when it helps us. But he says that he has this power based on, among other things, the International Emergency Economic Powers Act, the National Emergencies Act, and Section 212F of the Immigration and Nationality Act. Well, I did something weird, and I went and I looked up those specific codes. By the way, you can do that too. Go to your web browser, open uscode.house.gov, and you can find all of the U.S. code, and it's organized by title and section. So when President Biden says that he has this power under the International Economic Commerce Act, which is Title 50, USC, Section 1701, I went and I looked. And I said, okay, this says that any authority granted to the president by Section 1702 of this title may be exercised to deal with any unusual or extraordinary threat which has its source in whole or substantially part outside the United States to the national security, foreign policy, or economy of the United States if the president declares a national emergency, which he does as part of this executive order. Now, it goes on a little bit more about, what he can do. But I notice it says, listen, these are powers granted by Section 1702. So what is Section 1702? Well, it says that at times and to the extent specified in Section 1701 of this title, the president may, under such regulations as he may prescribe by means of instruction, licenses, or otherwise, investigate, regulate, prohibit any transaction in foreign exchange, transfers of credit or payment between, by, through, or to any banking institution, to any extent that transfers may involve any interest in a foreign country or national thereof, the importing or exporting of currency and securities. And again, it goes on into some more detail. So basically this says Congress said, you know what, Mr. President, if you declare an emergency for an unusual or extraordinary threat, show me where the extraordinary threat is. Show me where the unusual threat is. See, now, if it's out there, I'm not saying it's not out there. What I'm saying is that evidence hasn't been provided to the American people. Now, Mr. President, you work for the states. It's about time the states turned around and said, excuse me, Mr. President, where is your unusual or extraordinary threat? See, the only threat I've seen, is the threat that Trump might have been reelected. Or for that matter, they might be elected again. But I haven't seen an extraordinary threat, except by people within the United States, many of them politicians, who are fomenting violence and inciting riots. But we have this media myth, this propaganda, without any evidence, or at least nothing that stands the light of day, that the Russians are coming. The Russians are coming. And for that, we're going to give a couple of secretaries and the attorney general the authority to confiscate, to freeze your assets because someone claims without any due process of law? This is what happens when we let governments run amok. Now, President Biden also says he has his power under the National Emergencies Act, which is 15 U.S.C. 1601. So I went and looked at that. And it starts out, all powers and authorities possessed by the president, any other officer or employee of the federal government, or any executive agency is defined in Section 105 of Title V as a result of the existence or of any declaration of national emergency in effect on September 14th, 1976, are terminated 2 years from September 14th, 1976. What does that have to do with what President Biden has put in his executive order? The answer is, from what I see, absolutely nothing. Since this declaration of national emergency was not in place on September 14th, 1976, and even if it was, it would expire 2 years after that, which my math means September 14th, 1978, this is padding. There's nothing in here that says, there's nothing in 50 U.S.C. 1601 that has anything to do with this executive order. Now, he also said he has this power under Section 212F of the Immigration Nationality Act of 1952, which is 8 U.S.C. 1182. So I went and I looked at 8 U.S.C. 1182, which is Section 212F of the Immigration Nationality Act, which is titled Denial of Entry into the United States of Chinese and Other Nationals Engaged in Coerced Organ or Bodily Tissue Transplantation. Funny, I looked at the executive order and I didn't see anything about organ or bodily tissue transportation. So what does this have to do with Biden's executive order? Simple. It's padding. So either some lawyer looked at this and said, let's throw some extra laws in there so it looks good, or they looked at it and said, well, it allows the president to give a secretary the authority to issue laws, to bar certain actions and practices without due process of law. That's about the only thing I could see that has to do with President Biden's executive order. So my question comes back. States, what are you doing to rein in the federal government that was created when you enacted the Constitution of the United States, when you ratified it? What are you doing to stand up for the rights of your people? And people of the states, what are you doing to demand your representatives shoot this down? That your state governments say, no, Mr. President, you do not have the authority to freeze assets without due process of law. We're going to ignore it. In fact, we're gonna put it on a list of reasons to impeach you. But you see, this is what happens behind the scenes. And this is one of the reasons why it is so important that we learn to think for ourselves. That we learn to find out the facts. Because a lie of omission is just as bad as a lie of commission. And we have plenty of that coming out of what we traditionally call the news media, which right now is propaganda. I'm sorry, the what people call it, the mainstream media, the infotainment, whatever it is, it's the American Pravda. They are suppressing information that is bad for a particular party, and they are exaggerating and lying about news for another political party. They are lying for political gains. They are the propaganda wing of the Democratic and especially the far left Marxist socialist part of the wing of the Democratic Party. And why in God's name the American people trust a word they say is beyond me. But this is simply one example of, again, how Washington, in this case, which is what I'm looking at mostly today, is trashing the Constitution. The preamble to that lovely document says that one of the reasons they created the Constitution was to establish justice. And again, not social justice, not economic justice, not racial, just plain justice. Yet what do we see? The Biden administration wants to change. He wants to force colleges and universities to remove, to allow transgenders access to whatever dormitory they want. Now, I've tried very hard to understand the logic behind some of these laws, and there's only one thing I can come up with. There are certain favored groups, and they get whatever they want. And the rights and the desires and the health and safety of everyone else be damned. You know, they talk about the rights of the transgendered person. What about the rights of the other people in the dorm? What if a bunch of women don't want to live in a dorm and share a common bathroom with a guy because he's got a mental issue? He thinks he's a girl. You know, we've been spending a year talking about you have to follow the science. You have to follow the science. The science says that if you have an XY chromosome, you are a male. If you don't feel that way, now understand, if you want to live differently, fine. As long as you don't force that on other people. But see, that's the problem. It seems there will always be people that want to force their will on others. And now we have it in the Biden administration wants to do this to dormitories. And in fact, College of the Ozarks is now sued, or I guess is in the process of suing, the Biden administration for violating their rights. What rights? The right to live at liberty without government intervention. The right of a school to say, you know what, we're going to have male dorms and female dorms. If you got male parts, you go to the male dorm. If you got female parts, you go to the female dorm. And the federal government has no legal authority to tell us otherwise. Who's joining them? Because it's not just colleges. We're seeing this in public schools. We're seeing it pushed on private schools. We're seeing it pushed on How about battered women's shelters? Can you imagine a woman who has escaped a situation where she's either been abused by a husband or boyfriend, she may have been raped, she may have had other things, and she goes to a shelter for protection to get her life back together. And some guy, because he has a mental problem. He has a mental disorder. You can't say that, Paul. Yes, I can say that. I have freedom of speech. and I have the science and facts on my side. They have a mental issue. And because they have a mental issue, they're going to inflict how much pain and suffering on how many other people so that they feel better about their mental disorder. How many young girls want to take a shower with a guy? Think about it. Do you want to send your daughter to school knowing that whether she's in sports or just a phys ed class, taking a shower, and some dude walks in with his junk swaying in the breeze? Is that what you want? What about the rights of all those girls? Now, again, transgender, you have the right to live your life however you see fit until you infringe on the rights of others. Which means you want to walk around in a dress, knock yourself out. I think you've got a problem, but that's fine. Go ahead and do that. The government has no legal right to do that. But to tell people, especially private groups and private organizations, that they must reinforce your delusion is not only illegal for the government to do that. The very idea is immoral and un-American. It is a violation of the basic idea of rights and liberties and freedom. And as much as I complain about the government, Lord knows there's plenty to complain about, the American people are allowing this to happen. We are seeing more and more society where we're getting, either we are trying to force people to live the way we want, we're denying them freedom. And if we can't force it by simple peer pressure, then we go to government to make it happen. You want another perfect example? The Justice Department has launched an investigation into the Minneapolis Police Department. Why? Well, remember Derek Chauvin, the guy who was just convicted of murder, second-degree murder and manslaughter, and there was one other count. He was found, he was charged, he was arraigned, he was tried, and a jury of his peers convicted him of this crime. Now, we can have another debate on the fairness of that trial. That's not my point. The point is, someone committed a crime, that person was tried, judge found guilty, but that's not good enough. So now the Justice Department of the United States is going to investigate the city of Minneapolis in violation of the Constitution, in violating the rights of the state of Minnesota. Show me, where in the Constitution is the Justice Department, is the United States given authority to oversee state and local law enforcement? The answer is nowhere. When they have a specific charge of a violation of the Constitution or a law of the United States made pursuant to that, that's a different issue, but that's not what they're doing here. See, Minneapolis had the sad distinction of having a police officer commit a crime, caught on video, and because it was against a black man, the racists in our government are after them. That's right, I said it, the racists, because if everything revolves around race, then you're a racist. I don't care what color you are, and I don't care what races you hate. If your decision to do this is race-based, you are a racist. And that's exactly what's happening. The death of George Floyd, which I, from what I've seen, again, I haven't seen all the evidence, but from the evidence I've seen, certainly had some issues. But I am not happy with how Officer Chauvin acted. But I also know that there's evidence that Mr. Floyd didn't die from what Officer Chauvin did. But regardless, if you want justice, the man who committed this crime was charged, tried, and convicted. What more do you want? I have some thoughts, but I try not to read people's minds. And the next thing you have is, once again, here's President Biden saying, we need a new law, the George Floyd Police Reform Bill. Again, show me where in the Constitution the United States is given the authority to oversee state and local law enforcement. And the answer is nowhere. Nowhere. So to allow this to happen is to not only destroy the republic, we are fast devolving from a republic. It is accelerating at logarithmic pace because the consent of the governed, the will of the people is ignored. The separation of powers, the checks and balances that were put in place to protect us from an out-of-control government are left languishing. Because we're no longer ruled by laws. And in many cases, we're not even ruled by governments. We're actually being ruled by political parties. Why do I say that? Well, let me ask you, how many Trump policies were immediately overturned by Biden? The Republicans come in, they throw out their Democratic rules and establish Republican rules, completely illegally, by the way. Now the Democrats take over and the Republican rules go out and the Democratic rules go in. And of course, since the Democrats control Congress, you have Maxine Waters inciting a violence, telling people if they don't get what they want, trying to intimidate the jury, if they don't get what they want, they should be more confrontational. And the House does nothing. A resolution just to censure her, to say, bad girl, bad, bad girl, goes down on a party line vote. Why? Because she's a Democrat. And because she's a woman and because she's black, but primarily because she's a Democrat. Of course, the Republicans do the same types of things as well. They cover for their own. So we don't exercise our power. Government is now run by politics, by political party. And where did that get us? Remember George Washington's farewell address? The alternate domination of one faction over another, sharpened by the spirit of revenge, natural to party dissension, which in different ages and countries has perpetuated the most horrid enormities, is itself a frightful despotism. Do you want to know why we're living in despotic times? Why our rights are trampled? Why the rule of law is disappearing? Because we have turned governance into a team sport. Well, I don't care what your policies are. Do you have the right letter after your name? Are you a donkey or an elephant? We see people inciting riot. Oh, but they're a donkey. We can't complain about that. Or we see people breaking the law and we say, oh, no, but that's an elephant. We gotta keep him. How many people are trying to convince you to vote one way or the other, not because that person has the right philosophy, that person has sworn an oath and shown the support of the Constitution, but because we can't let the other team win? This mess is because we have allowed the political parties to run rampant, and we will not hold our elected officials accountable. So what happens when they do this? Well, again, Mr. Washington, President Washington, in his farewell address, it serves always to distract the public councils and enfeeble public administration. It agitates the community with ill-founded jealousies and false alarms, kindles the animosity of one part against another, foments occasionally riot and insurrection. It opens the door to foreign influence and corruption, which finds a facilitated access to the government itself through the channels of party passion. Thus, the policy and will of one country are subjected to the policy and will of another. Mr. Biden is worried about the Russian influence on our quote-unquote democratic processes. Excuse me, Mr. President, we're a republic, not a democracy. But the real opening to foreign influence It's not Facebook ads. It's party politics. It's people that will ignore the most horrid actions of their teammates, that will cover up the actions of their teammates. And again, when it comes to political parties, a pox on all their houses. I hold the Republicans and Democrats, Libertarians, Constitutional Party in the same disdain. Because when someone puts party above principle, or I should say their principle is primarily party above their oath of office, this is what happens. And it's our fault. And again, I'm reminded more and more, it's not simply what happens in government. It's the shutting down of free speech in public. It's the cowardice before mask mandates and vaccine mandates and shutdowns. It's the subjugation of the American people, not by force of arms, but by our own unwillingness to stand. At the Battle of Lexington, Captain John Parker told his men to stand their ground, and it seems the American people won't. The only people that seem to be standing are the ones that are rioting and trying to tear down our country, our society, our neighborhoods. And the American people won't stand. We seem so afraid of conflict, so afraid of being called names, that we will censor our speech, we will temper our actions, we will submit to the most horrid enormities, just so people won't call us names. Our national anthem says we are the land, we are supposed to be the land of the free and the home of the brave. But simple observation says that's not true anymore. We are no longer the land of the free when governments can violate laws we've put in place for them and rule over the people. We are not free. When a government bureaucrat can identify you and say and claim you are some Russian agent or some foreign agent and we're going to freeze your assets without any proof, without any probable cause, without any due process. When police can spy on you, whether it's reasonable or not, and courts allow it to happen. Now, I know the Supreme Court hasn't opined yet, but lower courts have. This idea that the police can lie to the people, but the people can't lie to the police. We are not equal before the law. Laws are not equally enforced. We are not free anymore, and we haven't been for a long time. But like the proverbial frog in the pot, our freedoms have been eroded over the years and over the decades to the point now where I don't know if the American people even would know what a right is if it bit them in the backside. But if we're not the land of the free, we are also no longer the home of the brave. Do you know how I know that? I know that by the number of people I see wandering around with masks on. Now again, if you want to wear a mask because it makes you feel better and you think it's going to keep you safe, that's fine. But how many people are wandering around with masks on because some government bureaucrat told them to? How many of them put on two masks because some government bureaucrat told them to? In complete contradiction to the science, in complete contradiction to evidence, in complete contradiction to simple observation, the American people appear too scared to look at their government, to look at the fact that they're running around, they're the emperor that has no clothes, and we're too scared to point it out. We are not the land of the free and the home of the brave anymore. But we could be. we could return to that vaunted place in history of the bastion of freedom and liberty. How do we do that? By living our lives protecting the rights of others. Looking at every infringement of someone else's rights as a moral offense that must be stood against, that must be challenged, that must be defeated. Whether that infringement comes from government or not. It means deciding what's more important to you. That $5 cup of coffee or the liberty and freedom of you and your children. Of looking at the Karens and these corporations that are hiding information from you and bullying you and trying to intimidate you into action and standing up and saying, no, I will not. I will not comply. I'll be peaceful about it. I won't fire unless fired upon, but I will not comply with illegal laws, and I will not comply with the bullying of tyrants, whether they be government or private. No tyrants. And I will find others that are willing to stand. Why? Because to be the home of the brave, we must work together. As Benjamin Franklin said when they signed the Declaration of Independence, we must all hang together, or most assuredly we will hang separately. So if you want to find some other scholars, some other patriots willing to stand, head over to constitutionscholars.com. You can find out more there. And if you want to find out more about this program and others, head over to AmericaOutloud.com for the latest news and happenings. It's important that we do our part, that we share these stories, we share these articles, we share the videos and the podcasts so that we can help secure America's future. And hopefully I'll meet you here next time on the Constitution Study.